Welcome to the first podcast of 2019 from Senators Nation. This is Pat LaRusso. I will soon be joined by Lucas Ugenti as well as Stephanie Ferrer, where we'll be discussing the first half that was for the Maple Leafs, as well as some second half and playoff predictions, as well as much, much more.
It looks like it's still just two of us, eh?
Yeah, so just have to wait for Lucas to come on. And then we're good.
Hello.
There we are, guys. So welcome to the first podcast of 2019. It's Pat LaRusso, and we have Lucas and Stephanie on the line. How's it going, guys?
Good, and you?
We're all right. Lucas, how were your holidays?
They were good. Much needed. Much needed break from school, to be honest.
Excellent, excellent, guys. So I guess we have a lot to talk about. You know, the first half of the season's now behind us. You know, we have another 40 games now in front of us with the trade deadline, you know, soon approaching. So let's get started on the first half. You know, what were your thoughts, guys, on the first half of the Leafs season?
Well, in terms of the first, I think we were really focused on Nylander and, of course, him signing with us. He got the monkey off his back. We're still waiting to see what else he can bring to the ice. But I think we need to give him a fair shot. And with Hutchinson, what a sign. I'm telling you. I'm really excited that he joined us.
Definitely a steal, you know, for that. It does give the Leafs a little bit of depth in the goaltending area. The Nylander thing, you know, it still is a topic of discussion. And I'm, you know, let's just see what the second half brings us. But I definitely hope that storyline now, you know, can finally see its end. Lucas, what have you thought of the first half of the Leafs season? Anything that stood out to you, or anything you'd like to see maybe improved come the second half?
It's not so much about seeing anything to improve. I mean, it's pretty tough to improve on a successful half of the season already. But you know what? What I did notice is that the Leafs did bring some championship winning tendencies to the ice and to their gameplay, and that was pretty cool to see. You know, they never really just gave up in a game. You know, they always kept fighting back. Even the Tampa game against Winnipeg, who's a great, great team in the Western Conference, they just always hung around there. I mean, you know, they got shut out by Nashville 2 games ago or last game, whatever it was, and even then, I thought they were a very good team. Like, they played very well. They had their chances. They just didn't bury when they should have. And realistically, Nashville is also a very good team, and they're going to win those types of games just as the Leafs should too. And realistically, if they keep doing this throughout the rest of the season, the next 40 games, it should be no problem going into the playoffs.
Most definitely. I guess the one thing for me that kind of stood out at times, and it's not like an overarching thing over the first 42 games, but there were times where I thought the workload or the work ethic, the level of work ethic seemed to have declined. You know, we all know, and the talent on the team is, you know, has been well talked about, but, you know, there were times where I felt that, you know, maybe with a little bit more effort, maybe we would have gotten a different result, and maybe that gap between the Leafs and Tampa wouldn't be where it is. You know, I guess for me, and not to nitpick, but I think that there were some times in the first half that I think the games got ahead of them, and they didn't come out to play, you know, on time. Sometimes they would show up in the third period. And it just, I that's one thing that I would like to see the team improve on heading into the second half of the year.
Yeah, I agree with that fully. I think starting on time was a big thing for them. I think Babcock noticed that. Anybody can notice that realistically. And come playoff time and the playoff stretch, you have to start on time. And that's obviously one of the most important, you know, not conceding first and just being ready to go right off the opening faceoff. Hopefully that changes. But other than that, and I'm going to be honest with you too, I kind of want to stop seeing the last minute goals. I don't know if you recognize that, but there's a big trend there with Toronto letting in a goal with a minute left in the period.
Yeah, it's you almost anticipate it now. Like, you almost white knuckle that last minute of every period because you just never know. And that kind of does speak to, like I said, going back to the work ethic and I think too, like, you really notice this team, the dynamic and the level of play change when someone is, you know, like a Zach Hyman's out of the lineup. Like, you almost feel it. you don't. He's very much in the roster, but you definitely notice an element to the Maple Leafs game that's missing when he's not there. And you know, I for one, am really looking forward to having him back on the team come tomorrow night's game against New Jersey.
And we're winning that great game, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I think that would be, you know, at least to start off, you know, and get things going again. I think the Leafs need to really pounce on those teams that are below them in the standings and try and, you know, gain those extra 2 points that are so crucial now that the teams below them now are really catching up.
Well, it'd be nice because teams like Tampa don't drop these kind of games, right?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I think it does speak to the Leafs really needing to come out strong, taking the 2 points. Because, you know, when you look at a team like Tampa, there's hardly any games where anyone could say they've taken a night off. And mm-hmm. You know what? That's not, you know, and we can't necessarily say that about the Leafs. There were times where I felt after, you know, the games, it's like, really? Did we really get an effort from this team? And I know, too, there's always another team on the ice and, you know, they're out to stop the Leafs. But I just think that if the Leafs don't learn to grind games out when the games become that type of grind it out, you know, go to the corners, get the dirty areas, that, you know, I think that'll be the biggest thing that I would like to see heading into the second half of the year is their compete and their fight. Because Boston's not going to give them any ice come playoffs. The season's just going to get tighter now that we head into the final 40 games of the year. So it'll be kind of nice to see, you know, what lessons were learned from the first 42 games and how that'll carry into the final 40.
I also think it's about their rebuild. I mean, with players coming back, like let's say with Nylander, we have guys like Kapanen who have still stepped up and shown that they want to play. And I don't think that they have a night off. I think they show that they're putting effort. But look at that Nashville game. Matthews, he took a shot. He took so many shots and they were just not getting in the net. And I mean, it's a little unfair to say that they took the night off, because I find that a lot of those guys, they show up, they dress to play, and they are there playing their hardest. And sometimes it's just not their night.
And, yeah, no, most definitely.
Right. And I find it's really difficult on my end. I love the Leafs. And sometimes, I mean, 42 games is 42 games, and it's a physical game, it's a mental game, and at times for us, it's an emotional game. But yes. At the same time,
yep.
This is a lot of pressure on these guys, and I mean, they're training for it. They have early practice. They have to watch what they do on the ice, and I mean, those kids have been working at their hardest, and I have to say I commend them on how well they've been handling the season. Because I mean, this could be a lot worse for us. Let's be fully honest. This could have been a trade gone totally down south with Anderson being hurt and with Garrett Sparks concussion. I mean, this could have gone completely south. And I mean, there's going to be lessons learned. The games are going to be a bit gritty at times, but I think as long as they keep their head above water and they show up to play, whether it's on time. I think as long as they're on the ice during the national anthem, I think they're on time. I can be late, but they can.
most definitely. So now that we get into the second half of the year, are there things that you look forward to? Are there things you would like to see the Leafs do now, you know, once, you know, now that we're heading into the trade deadline? Sort of what do you guys, you know, look forward to, or what do you guys kind of foresee the Leafs doing heading into, you know, the most crucial time of the year and heading into the playoffs?
If I'm being honest, I don't think the Leafs are going to do anything come the trade deadline. I think they know where they want to be and they know the direction they want to trend in. And I don't know if giving up too many pieces just to acquire a defenseman this year would be the right move necessarily. Obviously, I could be wrong. We don't know what Dubas is thinking, but I just think with the market the way it is and the asking price of some of these players, is it really worth it considering Toronto is winning games and playing very well? I know it's a different game come playoff time, but I don't know. I just it doesn't sit well with me to trade away future draft picks and future prospects for, say, Pietrangelo for 1 year just for right now. Like it happens, but I don't think the defensive core we have is strong enough to add one more player and become elite. I think we're still one, maybe two more defensemen away. I mean, not to say that the prospects in the minors aren't good enough. It's just when you look at Tampa and they got four solid defensemen, even if we add another one, we're looking at two with Riley and the additional defenseman. Is Gardner elite? Is Gardner a good defensive defenseman? I don't know. I'm just saying I don't see the Leafs making any big drastic changes come the deadline.
Most definitely. And Steffi, what are you looking for, you know, heading into the final half of the year? Is there anything that, you know, you would like to see the Leafs do? Or
I'm going to be terribly honest. I don't want them to just bite a chunk and think about the future prospects. Cause for me, I think they need to be in the present. I think they have to be focused on what's happening now. Example, tomorrow, that their head should be what's happening tomorrow, what's happening in the game. And I mean, we could think about, you know, the 2-year prospect, the 5-year prospect, and what's going to happen in 10 years. I think right now they just need to buckle down, really set in motion what they're going to try to aim for, which is the playoffs and, of course, going for Sir Stanley Cup. So for me, I'm excited no matter which way you look at it. I mean, if we're in the playoffs, I'll take it because of those years that we were in that drought. So I'm so looking forward to what Tavares could bring to the team. Because, I mean, you look at the first 42 games and now, you know, with the rest of the season, I think this is the part that our eyes and ears are really going to be trained on our guys, because this is the team that we have right now. And I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, trading prospects that we don't even know who they technically are yet, because, you know, the draft picks haven't come around just yet. But I mean, we got to focus on now. That's all I can say. And I just hope that those 2 points add up for us.
Yeah, no, and I think from my take, and I wrote about it in our most recent blog, was, you know, I think, you know, if we take, you know, Kyle Dubas at his word that he's looking to add players with some term, and that would allow the Leafs some flexibility heading into next year or even in the summer, where, you know, it does, all signs seem to point that Jake Gardner won't be re-signed, and, you know, possibly the team might look at moving on from, you know, a Nikita Zaitsev as well. You know, I would like, I, you know, if I had my, to, you know, to be happier to look for a trade, you know, I'm looking at a Colton Parayenko out of St. Louis, who still has about I believe the last time I checked was about 3 years left on a contract, just over $5 million a year. You know, he would come in a shade less than Jake Gardner. You now have a controllable asset. You might have to give up a Kapanen or a Johnson and maybe then some to complete a deal of that nature. But with the amount of offense that this team has, you know, maybe shoring up that defense heading into the playoffs would be an area that I would look at. And then as some supplemental scoring and some grit, maybe looking at what a deal would look like for a Wayne Simmonds to kind of shore up that third and fourth line heading into what looks to be another showdown with the Boston Bruins. And we all know how the Boston Bruins play. They play a very heavy game. And, you know, to have some pushback outside of a Zach Hyman and a Nazem Kadri, and, you know, in the way of a Wayne Simmonds, because of the way he plays and his offensive ability, I really think that would really nicely round out the Leafs roster heading into the playoffs.
Now, you don't think that ends up hurting Toronto? Let's say come the deadline, Dubas's only offer is, all right, we'll give you Parayenko, but I want Kapanen.
If I think on the long term, we have to look at Parayenko's not like a veteran guy. He's not in his 30s. You know, I think when we look at rental deals at playoffs, we always look at the guys that are like their late 20s, early 30s. And those types of guys would scare me away from giving up a young guy like a Kapanen. But when you're looking at a Colt Parayenko that's heading into his prime as well, you pair that into, you know, a Morgan Riley that's earning way less than market value with the amount of production that he's been producing, you know, this year especially. I think it really rounds it out. And then I think it does give the Leafs at least some idea of what that defense is going to cost them to make additional changes and modifications come the summertime. And if you look at, you know, the offensive ranks, even on the Marlies, they do have a lot of kids, not necessarily at Kapanen's level, but that are still producing, like a Jeremy Bracco, and a couple others that could help fill in those additional roles. And I just think that at some point you got to give up talent to get it, and it might come in the way of a Johnson or a Kapanen.
Not Mango. I mean, with Johnson, he's a great player, and I think with defense, I mean, I miss not defense. It's, I want to say, the enforcer. You know, what happened to the guys that were like Ty Domi?
They right? they kind of went the way of the dodo bird when the salary cap kind of came in. It's hard to have a one-dimensional player that a guy you're only going to have play 5 minutes a game. You know, I think the game has evolved into a more, if you're going to get like your enforcer, quote-unquote enforcer, you're not really, I think that those roles are now gone out of the league. I think if you're looking for muscle, a Wayne Simmons, maybe an additional guy like a Zach Hyman, I think that's willing to go in the corners and muck it up, I think, you know, would really strengthen the Leafs. But you look at Boston, a lot of their forwards are those heavy types of players. You know, as much as we all hate Marchand, you know, he does serve a purpose and he produces at the same time.
Hey, I only hate Marchand because he hurts the Leafs. Honestly, he's probably one of my favorite players in the league. Love the way he plays.
But can you imagine someone like Marchand wearing a Leafs jersey?
That would be a phenomenal. I think that's a lost art on this Leafs team. Like, they have an abundance of skill. I think to now round it out, having an additional body like a Zach Hyman or a Wayne Simmons would do this roster wonders when it comes time when the game really gets down to a grind. Because at this point, you know, what I've found, and this is my opinion, when the games slow down and they do become very grind-like, the Maple Leafs don't have a lot of pushback. You know, teams have now learned you clog up the middle of the ice, mm-hmm. you block the pass going down the middle, and the Leafs at times have shown that they struggle with their zone entries. So to have a physical body that's able to carry the puck into the zone and start a forecheck in the offensive zone, you know, I think would just alleviate a lot of the pressure on the big boys, like on a Tavares, on a Matthews. And it would really, you know, allow the Maple Leafs to do what they do best once they're in that offensive zone.
Agreed.
I guess, you know, to wrap up this podcast, you know, the latest news on the Marner situation, that kind of not necessarily caught me off guard when, you know, we all knew, all signs pointed, he was going to wait to the summer to sign his new deal. But it begins, when you start adding the pieces with the whole Paul Marner controversy earlier on just before the holidays and now him wanting to sit, it almost has a feel of a William Nylander where the agent's not willing to discuss during the year. You know, you have a father that, you know, appears to have a chip on the shoulder when it comes to his son. I'm just wondering where this goes. And are we looking at another holdout heading into next season?
I have to admit, I don't know much about the controversy with Paul Marner. I don't know what that's anything about. In terms of him, if Marner is waiting out and that kid's putting up numbers as if he's, you know, I think he's an all-star already. I said it before and I'll say it again. So if he's holding out on signing, I think his mindset is in the right place. Right now, he should just be thinking about what he's doing right now. So what is that with Paul Marner? What's the controversy?
Well, I guess there was some private conversations that he had with some fans over Twitter. There were screen grabs shared. I'm not sure, Lucas, if you've seen them, but there were some screen grabs that were shared. And a lot of the comments were very it was very direct. He put the coach down. He put some of the other players down. He really talked up his son, and then came the radio interview where it kind of just reignited and those conversations got shared again. I appreciate that there's, you know, there's always going to be that parent that's going to look out for their child. But he does seem to come across as a different breed. And you know, for all the complaints that Michael Nylander took during the William Nylander contract negotiations, I'm just wondering how much Paul will play into what Mitch's next contract's going to look like. And, you know, obviously a parent's going to want the best for their child. And I've always been, and, you know, I'll stand by my original point when it came to Nylander. I'm always a player first type of guy. I believe, you know what, if you've earned a particular contract, you go get it. And I just find that a lot of those people that were in the anti-Nylander camp now may have boxed themselves in because they projected what they thought Mitch Marner would be. And now we're seeing that, you know, even now he's beginning to look at hockey as a business and he's you know, may need to hold out or may need to, you know, push this out to get a deal that he feels is fair based on his production this year. What are your thoughts, Lucas?
No, I agree with that fully. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm pretty scared about it too. I don't know much about Paul Martner just as a person, only from what I've read and what I've seen on Twitter and whatnot. But I mean, he doesn't seem too friendly when it comes to the whole, is my son better than other players type of situation. And that's fine. Like, every dad wants their kid to be the number one, especially when he is as talented as Mitch. So you can see his argument and as to why he doesn't, or as to why he's upset that people don't have Mitch in the conversation of being a captain or being the best player on this Leafs, whatever, that's fine. My issue is Mitch Marner worth Auston Matthews' money? And as much as I don't think so, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I don't think Marner is as talented as Matthews, I just think Matthews might be a more pivotal piece to the Toronto Maple Leaf puzzle. And in saying that, it's just so hard to find a centerman that is big-bodied and skilled. And yes, I know Matthews doesn't throw his weight around, but you also can't knock him off the puck either. And I'm not saying Mitch he is small, but I'm not saying he's soft as in, all right, you blow on him and the puck's gone. But it's just, you find a centerman with that much weight on him, that much skill, that much ability to go 200 feet up and down the ice, it's rare. And yeah, he's probably going to cost between 10 and 11 million, if not more. Do I see Marner at 10 and 11 million? I truly don't. Is Marner's camp going to see him at about that? I probably think so, because realistically, he's probably going to finish first or second on the Leafs in points again. Is that number a little skewered because Matthews misses however many games he does a year? Maybe. But points are points, and he's putting them up. And if he's asking for 9.5 and 10, it's almost tough to say no. I don't know. I don't know how Dubas is going to be able to do this, but it would not shock me.
Yeah, I definitely think that this, and out of the two, I was always the belief of the Matthews contract always appeared to be the easier of the two to sign, just based on, you know, my impressions of him, you know, my impressions of, you know, how, you know, even this, his father and his parents, you know, both Emma and I forget Austin's father's name, but both of his parents seem to, you know, really appreciate the sport, and I just found that they come across a little bit differently, and I always had that in the back of my head when it comes to these types of really difficult negotiations. And you know, a lot of you know, Michael Nylander caught a lot of heat for the whole William Nylander situation, and he never once came out in the media and complained. You know, he may have pulled some strings behind the scenes, but none of us ever knew about it. I always found, and I always thought, you know, as soon as I started seeing the initial, you know, whispers on Twitter in regards to some of those exchanges that, you know, that were being had by Marner's father and some of the fans, that it kind of brought a different element. And I always had it in my back of my head that that's going to be the difficult contract to sign. That, you know, I think at the end of the day, William Nylander was always going to get between 6.5 and 7. The fact that he landed on 6.9, fine. You know, I just figured maybe if the team had, you know, offered that right off the start, or at least somewhere near that, that we wouldn't have had that long dragged out negotiation. Matthews is going to get his 12 and a half to possibly 13 with, you know, with the cap going up next year. But Mitch's contract was always going to be the sticking point for me. So, and I don't think, as some fans do, that Mitch is going to take a hometown discount. I think that's gone just as way. I think that went out the window just alongside the enforcers. I don't believe that there's a hometown discount coming in the way of Mitch Marner's next contract.
No, not anymore. Definitely not anymore. He's too good, too talented, just puts up too many points to say, all right, I'll take a hometown discount, especially because he knows he can get the money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with the whole Nylander situation, I think a big reason as to why they didn't want to sign him for even 6.9 was because even that couple $100,000, I mean, that could have went to Marner, right? And realistically, I mean, you just said you see Matthews at 12, maybe 13. That's McDavid money. Is he worth McDavid money?
I think,
you know what, I think with the salary cap going up, and because I guess a lot of these deals are based on the percentage of the cap. So when we look at the cap going up next year, even if Matthews took the same percentage of the Leafs cap, we're looking over McDavid's contract with the cap going up, right? And that's one sticking point with me that I always had, and no one could really, you know, debate me on it, is, you know, you can't compare a contract that was signed two or three seasons ago when the salary cap was nowhere near what it's going to be next. Because I think they're projecting it to be over $80 million. You know, the salary cap was lower, you know, when McDavid signed his contract. It was even lower when Stamkos signed his contract and Kucherov signed their contract. So I've always hated comparing contracts with that in mind, only because, you know, with the salary cap going up, you have to assume that all those new contracts, there's going to be a little bit of a bump, even if it doesn't necessarily equate to, like, the, using Pastrnak as an example or an equivalent to Nylander. You know, Pastrnak signed his contract, I believe, last year or even the year before. You know, that there was no idea of what the cap was going to look like this season. So William Nylander just took a couple extra $100,000. And two, from the way I look at it is every player needs to look out for themselves. None of their careers are guaranteed, you know, and to you know, that's where, you know, as much as I like the Tavares signing, we all knew this was coming. We all knew that the other three kids' contracts were coming up. You know, we still don't have a defense yet that, you know, is Stanley Cup ready, at least my thoughts. So, you know, did we really need Tavares? He's been a great addition, don't get me wrong, but we knew we were going to hit this wall. And to expect players to just say, yeah, you know, we'll take a pay cut, I just don't see it. I just don't see it from a business perspective. I don't see it from a players' union perspective to expect players to take less because you may have mismanaged your money and applying it to other assets.
I kind of miss the days where it was like a player with, like, let's say Brett Hull, where he used to say, for my contract, this is what I expect if I'm producing. If I'm not producing, you can pay me X amount, which is a lot less than what I'm asking for. But if I put up numbers, I expect to be paid this amount. So there was a little bit of give and take. There was a little bit of pushback, and it went back and forth. I find that with the Leafs, if you're going to fit in, you're going to fit in, and they'll find a way to pay you. But I mean, for Marner's case right now, the kid is producing. He's putting up really great numbers. And I find that with Marner, everyone's been against this kid from the get-go. Like, he was too small. And I think he's proving a lot of people wrong. And whether his father had a private conversation, I think as long as it's within those very important four walls, the walls of the contract, if he's producing, I think he's very well worth the money. And I think when he's on the line with Tavares and he's getting fed and he's scoring, I think he's worth the money. He's worth every penny. And I find with the Leafs, either you're in or you're just in the way. So Nylander held out. He signed. He's with us. We're still waiting for him to produce, but at least he's taking shots. He's on the ice, and he's there. He's very much there. He's not on Robitaille's Island. He's not off with Joffrey Leupold hiding somewhere. You know, cut the loose ends, keep the guys who are there and showing that they want to be there. Those are my personal opinions.
So, Lucas, would you have any final thoughts before we wrap this latest podcast up?
Final thoughts? No, not really. I guess I should just say I like the way the Leafs are trending. You know, they're trending in the right direction. It's good hockey to watch day in, day out. Even when they play bad, they seem to stay in games and make it exciting. And, you know, it's refreshing considering where they were a couple years ago. So I'm happy. I'm happy as a fan. Happy to be a part of the culture here. And hopefully good things keep coming.
Most definitely. So thank you again, both of you. Stephanie, congratulations and welcome to our team. It's been great having you. And,
thanks,
you know,
for
and
having
I look forward to all the future podcasts and more of your content as the remainder of the year progresses. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Bye.
Take care, guys.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.